Throughout history, the global landscape has been marked by instability. Nations on every inhabitable continent have seen governments rise and fall, some over 20 times in the span of a century. Yet, America's government endures and has for over 200 years. Why is our nation the exception to a worldwide norm? What makes America different? Join historian David Barton with special guests Glenn Beck, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, and more as they explore the America our founding fathers envisioned. What if America's story is bolder, more colorful, and more compelling than you ever imagined? This is Foundations of Freedom.
Welcome to Foundations of Freedom, where we'll look at important aspects of our common heritage that very few folks today hear anything about. Joining me today is Rick Green. Rick is an attorney, he's a former legislator, he's an author of several books, and he runs Patriot Academy, which is a wonderful program for kids that teaches them how to become our future civil leaders. And Rick, you and I also have the pleasure of co-hosting a daily national radio program, so it's great to have you on the program here.
It's a privilege to be here, and I love today's topic, American exceptionalism. What makes us different? Because when you look at results, America has had some amazing results, better than any nation in history. But if you're going to call the program Foundations of Freedom, we got to know what the foundations are that produce that. So what is it that makes America so special?
Well, we have a lot of things that make us special, but we have a lot of opposition to what makes us special as well. And you hear that opposition voiced very often, particularly in the academic community and from citizens as well.
Well, some people don't like us saying that we're exceptional. So let's go to some of the questions that we get with regard to America being different.
To me, some Americans can seem so arrogant. They claim that America is just better than all the other countries. But how can that really be true?
Well, that cuts to the heart of it right there.
There it is.
If we're different, does that mean we're arrogant? And are we actually different?
That comment is a product of modern public education.
Yeah.
Because I did a book on exceptionalism, and it goes through the reasons why. And first off, it is not arrogant to say that. If we say someone is the exception rather than the rule, we don't suddenly say, oh, that means they're arrogant and cocky. No, the exception to the rule can often be a very good thing. And that's what America is. We're the exception to the rule of what happens to other nations. That's not anything of our own doing or arrogance. There are things that we've been able to do that help us become different from other nations.
So it just means we're not ordinary.
We're not ordinary.
It's a different
That's right.
set of results, beyond ordinary.
And by the way, way back at the beginning in America, 50 years after our revolution, we had folks coming here from across the world saying, what is up with you guys? You're so different from everybody else. Why are you so different? And one of the first guys to do that is this guy right here, Alexis de Tocqueville. He came to America and wrote Democracy in America.
That is a very big book.
That is a big book. That is a big book. And so he's telling all the Frenchmen, he says, I was there. I spent several months there. You need to know what makes them different. And he's the guy who says, America is exceptional. He said, I don't think any other nation will ever attain to what America's done.
So you're telling me that a Frenchman came over here, studied America,
That's right.
trying to figure out what was making us special and different, and he said we were exceptional.
That's right.
So he was, if anybody's bragging, a Frenchman was bragging on us.
And it's not just, you have Achille Murat, who's another Frenchman who came to America and said, I got to see this for myself. He wrote a book for his French compadres and said, these guys are exceptional. And then you got Harriet Martineau. She was from England and came here and said, what is so different about America? And so her society in America, she says, America's exceptional. This is a remarkable nation. You got Philip Schaff, who was a German citizen and a Swiss citizen. He came here and he traveled. He said, this is remarkable. Never seen a nation like this. So throughout history, it's all the other folks who come here and say, this is exceptional. So it's not our arrogance or cockiness. It's everybody else saying, we've never seen this before.
Aren't they really just wanting to know what makes us different? I mean, if somebody does outstanding in sports or in anything else, people tend to look and say, what's their formula? What makes them able to stand out?
Well, it's interesting that in academia right now, they hate us being different from other nations. And let me just read some professors' comments here. We can now see that the United States and the members of the European community are industrialized and urbanized. They have all undergone the same popularization of politics. From this vantage point, America does not appear exceptional at all. So there's nothing special about us. Like Europe, we're industrialized, we're urbanized. Here's another one. our military missteps in Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq, the decline of American power abroad, and continuing domestic problems. They all provide evidence that America is not exceptional, but rather is like every other country in the world.
It's almost like they want to pull us down to the lowest common denominator.
Here's another one. The United States is said to be a nation of immigrants, but historically such countries as Argentina have a higher rate of foreign-born population than the 19th century, and so they're equally, if not more, deserving of being called exceptional. Now notice, exceptionalism is measured by foreign-born population, by urbanization, by military missteps. That's what makes you exceptional.
So to come back to that formula, right. How is it that we became so special and so exceptional?
Significantly, the Founding Fathers, when they birthed America, felt a responsibility to tell the rest of the world what was going on. And so in the Declaration of Independence, our birth certificate, they say, we think we have a moral responsibility to let everybody know why we're doing what we're doing. So they start out with the Declaration of Independence that begins with 155 words that set forth the philosophy of American government. They then give 27 grievances showing how that philosophy has been violated by Great Britain, and they then come with the pledge that says, we're going to create a new nation. We pledge our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. But you have to go back to those 155 words up top. And in those 155 words, you find five very clear principles that they set forth, said, this is what America is going to be built on.
This is the formula.
So we have all
these folks come over here 50 years later and observe the results.
That's right.
But what you're talking about now is back at the Declaration, those five principles, that's the formula that produces
results. Okay. And when you see these five principles, you say, America did that. And you can also say, no other nation has ever adopted those five principles.
So there's a reason we're different.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
God's no respecter of persons. He's no respecter of nations. Any nation that'll take the principles, they'll get the same results. But so far, no other nation's been willing to adopt those principles. And there is a big movement in the nation today to get away from those principles. And you'll see why. So let's start with the very first principle. I'm just going to read the clause out of the Declaration here. And it says, all men are created equal, and they're endowed by their Creator. Uh-oh, we got God in this thing. First thing we tell the rest of the world is, hey, we in American government believe that there is a Creator God, and that we've been endowed by Him. So what you start with there, that's the first step toward having limited government. Because government has just said, hey, and by the way, this is not just individual founding fathers making this declaration. It says at the top of the declaration, this is the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. This is a governmental body. And we're told today, the court says, you know what? We've got people in America who don't believe in God. There's atheists, there's others, and we don't want them to
feel outside. So therefore, government can't talk to God.
Therefore, government can't. No, this is a government document telling the whole world this is what the new government of the United States
believes. And saying this is one of the principles of our government.
This
so you may not
principle.
Believe in God, but to live in this nation, you're going to live in a nation that has as a source of its principles.
Because that's the first step toward limited government. You can't have liberty unless you have a limited government. And you can't have a limited government if government thinks it is God. So what the founders did is say, oh, no, government, you're not God. There's something higher than you. You don't get all the power. And what happens is secular governments try to become God.
Yeah.
They try to regulate every aspect of your life. And the first thing we said is, hey, we want a limited government. We recognize as a Creator God, and government, you ain't God.
Yeah.
This is God. Now, this is so significant that George Washington, when he became president, on the day we finished the Bill of Rights, which is the capstone of the Constitution, on the day we finished that, you had Elias Boudinot and Roger Sherman, other founding fathers in Congress say, we need to have a day of prayer, national day of thanksgiving for what we've just done. And they approached George Washington, he said, exactly. And so what we have here, this is the very first federal Thanksgiving proclamation done by George Washington right here, 1789.
So this is an original.
This is original. This is the very first federal Thanksgiving proclamation. Now, why in the world would George Washington call the entire nation to acknowledge God? Very first line of this, Washington tells us why it's right for the nation, not individuals, for the nation collectively to acknowledge God. Now, I'm just going to read this to you. He says, it's the duty of all nations to, one, acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, two, to obey His will, three, to be grateful for His benefits, and four, humbly to implore His protection and favor. Washington said, this is the first belief of American government. We believe that governments have a duty to do four things: acknowledge God, obey His will, be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor.
He's doing this as President of the United States.
And it's the duty of, it's a legally binding contractual obligation. That's the first thing. That's where a lot of nations don't want to go.
Now, how soon was the ACLU suit against the president for doing this? This is the father of the country.
The father of the country.
And he's invoking God, and he's saying that we have a duty to acknowledge
and
God.
And we have told the rest of the world this is the first thing we believe in American government. This, and by the way, everything in the Constitution goes back to these principles in the 155 words of the Declaration. So for people to say, oh, the Constitution is secular, no. Article 7 of the Constitution ties itself directly to the Declaration of Independence. You cannot separate the two documents. This is the philosophy. This is the operation. We've told you there's a God. Now, here's how government operates under God.
And so this philosophy is the formula. Once again, we're coming back to the formula of our exceptionalism.
That's right.
The first piece of that formula is a duty to acknowledge God.
Of the nation to acknowledge God, not just
individually. So this is a public act.
That's right. Okay. The second thing is, continuing on the Declaration, it says, all men are created equal. They're endowed by the Creator. They're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, the notion that there are rights that don't come from government, that's a new notion back then, too.
Yeah.
Because government gave you all your rights, or it would regulate them or take them away. We've said, no, not only is there a God, we believe that God gives a certain category of rights to individuals, and they're not to be touched by government.
So this really is one of the things that makes us different from other nations. And I remember President Reagan had given a speech where he talked about the Russian Constitution, our Constitution, they have freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and all that. But he said in the Russian one, the government gives it to them. There's no mention of God giving it
to them.
That's right. So why we're different is that we believe that God gave us these unalienable rights and government can't take them away.
And you look at those unalienable rights and you look at what they are, and the Founding Fathers were very clear about what they are. Sam Adams said we told you in the Declaration, right to life, liberty, and property. Then we came back 11 years later with the Bill of Rights and said, well, while we're at it, here's the other inalienable rights. You got a First Amendment right to worship God according to the dictates of conscience. You have a Second Amendment right to defend yourself, keep and bear arms. You have a Third Amendment right to the sanctity of the home. You have a Fourth Amendment right to due process, the Fifth Amendment right to private property. So all these things, and what's happened, the more secular we become, the more government says, I'm going to regulate your conscience. Mm. I don't think your conscience is doing what we... And by the way, I'll tell you when you can defend yourself, and I'll tell you what you can use and can't use to defend yourself.
So the more God's out of the equation, the more government can twist those definitions
and
limit those rights.
And it takes it over as though it gave you those rights.
Yeah.
It starts regulating those rights. So that was the second thing that made us unique is there is a God. God gives a certain set of rights, and government, you can't touch those rights. Then comes the third part of this equation. They say they're endowed by the Creator of certain inalienable rights. And then it says that to secure these rights, what rights? These inalienable rights. And the Founding Fathers listed about 24 inalienable rights. And by the way, let me back up and define an inalienable right for a minute. It's a God-given right, but listen to this. John Dickinson, who not only helped frame the Declaration, he's a signer of the Constitution, he said an inalienable right is a right which, quote, God gave to you and which no inferior power has a right to take away.
So what's an inferior power? Would that be government?
Anything
then?
Below God. That can be government, that can be your neighbor, that can be somebody with a gun. They don't have a right to take it away from you. If God gave it to you, it belongs to you. Nobody, they're stealing at that point.
That's an unalienable right.
And here's what Alexander Hamilton said. He said inalienable rights, quote, are not to be rummaged for among old parchments or musty records. They're written as with a sunbeam in the whole volume of human nature by the aid of divinity itself and can never be erased or obscured by any moral power.
Hmm.
He said, don't start looking for these rights in government documents because they didn't come from government. These came from God. You're not going to find them in government documents because government didn't come up with them. And here's the real key definition is John Adams. He says inalienable rights are, quote, antecedent to all earthly government. They're rights that cannot be repealed or restrained by human laws. They're rights derived from the great legislator of the universe. The key word there is antecedent. He said these are rights that came before government ever existed. Now, let's back up a minute. When Noah got off the ark, God told Noah, he said, Noah, here's what I want you doing now. I had all this trouble with you guys not behaving right with each other. You're killing each other. You're stealing each other. He says, here's what you're going to do. And he went through and gave seven categories of laws. They're called the Noahide laws. That's the first civil government in world history.
I never thought about before Noah, no civil government.
No civil government. And so what they're saying is an inalienable right is a right you find in the Bible before Genesis 9. And there's about 24 of those rights that they identified, the right of expatriation, the right of self-defense, all these rights that are there, the right of profit, the right of association, the right of travel and movement, these are all rights that you have before government ever existed.
So the things that we think of as freedom and being, you know, these are things we get to enjoy as free mm-hmm. citizens. The founding fathers traced back to
God,
the Bible, and even before Noah.
And that's the set of rights that you should be able to enjoy in any government in the world today. Whether you're in Russia, whether you're in Somalia, whether you're in the Philippines, whether you're in Singapore, you should be able to have
because
those
that's
rights.
The way God designed it.
That's the way God designed it. That's not a purely American innovation. Now, we're the ones who recognize and said, whoa, when you read the Bible, these rights existed before government, so government can't. So that's. But then the third point in the Declaration says that to secure these rights, what rights? These 2,000 inalienable rights. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. We now have the purpose of government. They just said governments are instituted among men to protect those 2,000 rights. The number one purpose of government is not to make sure everybody's got a job. It's not to make sure we have a good economy. The number one purpose of government is to make sure you have the freedom to enjoy the rights God told you you could enjoy.
So government didn't give them to us, government but government does have a role. And government's role is to protect
them. Those rights. Now, when you look at it, and James Wilson, who is James Wilson's one of only six founding fathers who signed the Declaration of the Constitution. James Wilson is the second most active member of the Constitution we mentioned. James Wilson was put on the original Supreme Court by George Washington. James Wilson started the first law school in America, and these are his original law books.
So this is clearly an expert then. If he's involved in Declaration, Constitution, serves yep. on the Supreme Court. So and
he's put on the Supreme Court by George Washington. While he's on the court, he did these books here for students. This is what he's teaching students in law school. And so he's teaching students in law school, and this is delicate stuff. I'm just going to read to you what he told them about the purpose of government. Because he's taking them through law school, and this is what he says. He says, the principal object of government was to acquire a new security for the enjoyment or acquisition of rights which we were previously entitled by the immediate gift of our all-wise and all-beneficent Creator. He said, the reason we have American government is to protect what God told you you have a right to do in Genesis 1 through 8. I'll give you an example of how that works. You go back to Genesis 1 through 8, you have the right to life. You have Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, and you have Seth, and you have all the kids, and Cain rises up and kills Abel. But then it starts spreading across the world. Mankind starts killing one another. They start stealing private property from one another. And God says, we got to wipe this out and start it again. So when he comes back with Noah, and Noah gets off with his three sons and their wives, that's when he gives the civil law. He says, here's the deal, Noah. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man will his blood be shed. Noah, if you find somebody that wipes out the inalienable right to life of somebody else, man's going to take him off the earth. Mm. You protect the inalienable right to life. And then he goes into property. And Noah, if somebody takes the private property, here's... And so you go through the Noahide laws. All of those laws were designed to protect what God intended for every individual to enjoy. And so that's
so
the
government doesn't
government
give it
is.
To us. Their job is to protect. So you shouldn't be anti-government either then, right?
You can't be anti-government.
Government has a proper role.
God ordained it. Genesis yeah. 9. But he ordained it to protect what he had previously given to man.
So it needs to stay in that proper role.
It needs
role.
To stay in that role. That's right.
And we should support it in that
That's
role.
Right.
And now, I say that because sometimes we do get into it. We don't think of government as a God-created institution. We just complain about what government does. So
that's right.
It's still a good thing
government's
if it stays
a good thing when it's
role.
Used the right way.
Yeah.
When it's used the right way, it's a good thing. Now, you come to the fourth point in this, and the Declaration says, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station in which the laws of nature and nature's God entitles it. We go, what is that? That is the declaration to the entire world that there is a fixed moral law, that there are rights and wrongs even for government. Now, that phrase, the laws of nature, nature's God, eight-word phrase, it came directly out of this book right here. This is Blackstone's commentaries on the laws. This is what every founding father studied as an attorney. Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson said that American attorneys studied this book like Muslims studied the Quran. Mm. I mean, attorneys knew this thing. And so right here in this book, in volume one, it's a four-volume set. In chapter two, it's called The Nature of Laws in General. And he goes in and he says, the laws of nature and of nature's God, that's the dual revelation of God. The first revelation of God is in creation. I don't know if you've had critics approach you, but as a Christian, I've had critics say, how can you guys say you have a loving God when he would throw someone in hell who's never heard the gospel before? Well, that's a good question. The answer to that is in Romans 1:20. And in Romans 1:20, Paul says, everything that can be known about God, including the intricacies of the Godhead, have been revealed through what he's created so that even the heathen are without excuse. Now, according to the Bible, God has so revealed himself in creation that even the heathen can look over and say, hey, God's got a plan for me.
Yeah.
He's got a way for me to know him. He's got a way to redeem me. And this is what Blackstone talks about. God gave it to us all in creation. He said, but what happened was when Adam sinned, it really messed our mind up. We're not as clear anymore. We don't hear from God like we used to. So God stepped in and says, okay, I'll write it down for you. I'll give you the Bible.
Not only will I show it to you in nature, I'm going to give you very clear instructions on how this should
work. So you have the laws of nature that God created and the laws of the God who created nature, which is the Bible. Now, those two things never contradict. Here's an example. If you take the laws of nature, let's say no Bible exists. How do I know what's right and wrong? Well, one thing I know for sure is the law of nature is self-defense is right. I don't care what species you are in nature, they will defend their young. They'll defend what they perceive to be their property, their home. They'll defend their own life. They will fight.
They don't have to be taught that. That's automatic.
And a great example, I raise horses and we've got sheep and whatnot. And among our sheep is a nice ewe, and she has usually twins every year. But for whatever reason, our cat really got to be buddies with that ewe. And so as you went through the summer, you know, they were always running around together. And
a cat and a lamb. This sounds like an animated movie.
It does.
It's real.
It's real.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, the ewe would lay down at night and the cat would go lay down beside it out in the pasture. And so they were great buds. And that worked that way until we got into the fall and that ewe had twins. And when she had twins, that cat went out there that night to lay down by that ewe like she always did, and that ewe pounded her in the ground. It's part of the nature.
Yeah.
Congress can pass all the laws at once. You can't defend yourself, you lamb, you have to stay. It makes no difference. That's a law of nature. God put it in nature to defend. So the right of self-defense, that's what the Second Amendment is.
So same for us. Somebody comes after your family, no matter what that law, you're going to defend your family.
And the government has no right to interfere with that. They have the right to protect it. Now, let's take something like abortion. There's more than 10 million species in nature. Find me any species in nature that kills its young while it's still in the womb.
None.
I don't need the Bible to tell me abortion's wrong. I don't care whether you believe in evolution or creation. I believe in creation, but you believe in evolution? Great. There's nothing in evolution that kills its young.
The laws of nature show us that.
Laws of nature. Homosexuality. Oh, yeah, it does exist in a couple of species, but out of 10 million species, it's always an aberration. It is never a lifestyle. No, never is that a permanent form of nature. So I don't need the Bible to tell me homosexuality. The laws of nature tell me. And it's the same way with the right to own property. Every animal is going to defend what it perceives to be its own home, if that's its barn, if that's its pasture, if it's whatever. See, these are all natural rights, and that's where we get a fixed moral law. There are absolute rights and wrongs. Then the fifth thing that we see in the Declaration says, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. This is where we get the will of the majority. So what you get, here's a quote by George Washington. George Washington said, the fundamental principle of our Constitution enjoins or requires that the will of the majority shall prevail. In other words, majority rules. You get Thomas Jefferson. He was the other political party. Washington's a Federalist. Jefferson's an anti-Federalist. And here's Jefferson. He says, the law of the majority is the natural law of every society. So they both agree. Majority rules. That's what we still say today. But notice that's the fifth thing. Majority rules only after you've established inalienable rights and fixed moral rights and wrongs.
So there's a hierarchy then of those principles.
You can have a majority vote, but you can't have a majority vote on whether we're going to have liberty or whether you have a right to defend yourself. You can't vote on inalienable rights. They come from God. You also can't vote on whether abortion is right or wrong or whether homosexuality is right or wrong. That's a fixed moral law. By the way, that's in the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution, what's called the common law. The common law embodies the absolute moral rights and wrongs as part of the Constitution. Then what do you have majority votes on? You have majority votes on what are called social compact laws. That's one of the forms of law in the Bible. And those are the things that we today would say, well, do we want the sidewalk to be 5 feet wide, 6 feet wide, or 7 feet wide? Majority rules on that. Do we want the speed limit to be 45, 55, 65, in Texas, 85 is our speed
limit?
Right. You know, those are things we can vote on because they don't deal with inalienable rights or moral laws. But if we had a referendum and we announced that the people have voted by a majority of 83% to 17% that you can't defend yourself, that's irrelevant because majority vote has nothing to do with my inalienable rights. Government exists to protect my right to defend myself or my right of conscience or my right to worship God or whatever. And if we had a vote that said, well, we had a referendum by a margin of 42 to 58, we voted that rape is no longer a crime. It'll be a crime because it's a violation of moral law. That's not a law of nature. It violates the laws of nature's God. And by the way, here's part of the moral law right there.
Yeah.
You know, you don't kill. You don't commit adultery, you don't steal, you don't perjure yourself. That's all part of the Seventh Amendment moral law. These are fixed rights and wrongs. You don't get a majority vote on these things.
So it sounds like then of those five principles that you've outlined that made America so great in the first place, and we know we've gone away from it. We got to get back to it. But what if I'm not a legislator, I'm not a pastor, I'm not in those leadership roles? What can I do as a citizen to be part of the solution, to help bring this back?
Great question. Every single citizen needs to read the Declaration of Independence. Short document, take a good 15 minutes to do it. You need to read it. You need to read those 155 words, see those principles. You need to see the grievances. And it'll also help you. You'll say, whoa, four of the 27 reasons we separated from Great Britain was because of judicial activism. I thought judges were supposed to make law. Read the Declaration, not by a long shot. So you go back and it'll change what you'll tolerate and what you put up with once you change your own knowledge. So go back, read the Declaration, and then memorize those five principles. Memorize those five principles that, number one, we in government believe there's God. Number two, we believe he gives a certain set of rights. Number three, we believe government exists first and foremost to protect those rights. Number four, God gives a fixed moral law that even government has to submit to. And number five, past that, we get the will of the majority.
So we don't have to reinvent the wheels, you're saying. We can actually go back to the original formula, and that formula still works today.
I don't have to reinvent the laws of gravity. I can go back to what Newton did several hundred years ago. He already found the laws of gravity. They still work today. I can go back and read what he
Yeah, but that Declaration of Independence, I mean, that's more than 200 years old.
Exactly.
Really, though? That still applies today.
But the principles, it's just like the laws of physics apply today, the laws of thermodynamics, the laws of gases, they were all discovered hundreds of years ago. We still use them today because they're principles that are timeless. Read the Declaration. Then after you read the Declaration, learn the 5 points that make us different from all
others. So those five things you just laid out, remind me what the five are.
There is a God, and we acknowledge that nationally. There is a God. God gives a certain set of guaranteed rights to every individual. Government exists to first and foremost protect those rights. God gives a fixed moral law to which government is also subject, and majority vote on everything else.
That's a pretty simple formula, really, when you get down to it. And if that's the formula to come back to, my first job is personally to learn that. Study the Declaration, study those five principles, but then go out there and share it. I mean, these guys did that. They shared it with their neighbors.
They shared it with their friends. And every single American today has a platform. You've got Facebook, you've got Twitter, you got Instagram, you got something.
It's not like it used to be. I mean, every individual can reach maybe dozens, sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of people to share these things with. And that way, together, we can restore those foundations of freedom.
And that's what this foundation of freedom is start with the Declaration, learn those 5 points, pass them on to others. That is the foundation of freedom we want to restore.
Thank you for watching Foundations of Freedom. For more information about America's true story, visit wallbuilders.com. You'll find resources like the Founder's Bible, David Barton's most significant work. No other book brings together your history, your government, and your Bible in a cherished volume you'll revisit time and again. Reignite your passion for America and your love for the Word of God with the Founder's Bible. Visit wallbuilders.com.